We're beginning our series on Tanakh, and tonight we'll take a few minutes to discuss an intro to prophets. So in last week's parasha, Parshat Shoftim, the Torah tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, Navi Mikil Becha, from amongst you, Am Yisrael, I will give you prophets, God says. Come only like me, says Moshe Rabbeinu. What is a prophet? A prophet is one who has a vision in which God speaks to them. Does God speak directly or not is a machlokes. It is a disagreement between Maimonides and Nachmanides. Maimonides learns that every prophet other than Moshe Rabbeinu saw a vision or was spoken to on behalf of an angel. Nachmanides learns that God spoke directly to the prophets. The verses say that God speaks to the prophet. Maimonides will interpret that to mean God spoke through an angel. So Rashi goes the way Nachmanides, even though he preceded Nachmanides, right, by over a century. But Rashi interprets like Nachmanides. Rashi says that God spoke directly to the prophets. But again, Maimonides is of the opinion that everyone but Moshe Rabbeinu saw their prophecy through a vision or through an angel. So in order for a person to attain prophecy, prior to Moshe Rabbeinu, prior to the Jewish exile, the Jewish exodus from Egypt, non-Jews also could get prophecy. One of the things Moshe prayed for, v'niflinu ani v'am echad, that the Jewish people should be unique, and that from that point onward, only Jews would get prophecy. So a Jew can get prophecy, but from that point onward, non-Jews did not get prophecy. We have Balak, right? Non-Jews were able to get prophecy previously, but not after that. So a prophet is someone who has worked on their traits. Prophecy is a level in perfection of one's traits. We have a braisa, a Tanaic quote, quoted in Tractate of Avodah Zarah, that describes how we develop our traits. Rav Moshe Chaim Letzato, sometimes known as Ramchal, wrote a famous work called Mesilat Yesharim, which is divided into chapters. Every chapter focuses on a different trait, how we develop it. My tradition is that that's a book that doesn't speak to our generation because we can't go beyond chapter 1 or 2. But we're very limited in how much we can develop in that book. And if people try to apply it in their lives, and they haven't really built it, so they could really go off the deep end. So we, at any rate, but many other people don't view it that way, and many people do study the book and learn what to aspire to. At any rate, we develop our traits, and that means that in order for a person to attain prophecy, they have to have perfected their traits. They have to be someone who doesn't let anger guide them, doesn't let emotion get the better of them, but rather they have tremendous emotion, but they control their emotion, they control their actions. And as a person becomes more humble, as a person becomes more kind, as a person perfects their traits and masters Torah, in order for a person to be a prophet, they have to be a master of Torah, they have to be a very big sage, then they can attain prophecy. We will see in the book of Judges that sometimes God places his spirit on leaders, even though they were not very learned in Torah. We will see leaders who are not learned at all, and yet God gives them his spirit, and that's an exception to the rule of prophecy. Ordinarily, in order to attain prophecy, one has to be very learned in Torah, one has to be very, very good and kind to an extreme degree, and then God will reveal himself, God might reveal himself to the person. The person can spend his whole life preparing and never get prophecy, or get only one prophecy, or two. But a prophet doesn't control when God's going to talk to him. He can prepare and pray and hope. Yes?
Just get clarity a little bit. You say that Ramadi says that it was through angels and Ramadi Rashi face to face, but rather directly from Hashem. But the question is, hey, how is it relevant if, except for Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody got prophecy like you talking to me? It all came through dreams or anyway. So where the source was, you know, whether it's God or through an angel, God directly or through an angel, since it's not coming to you from the source that you're aware of at the time.
So wait, let's hear a little bit more.
The concept of angel also be good.
So that's on a Thursday night,
okay.
Let's continue. There are different levels of prophecy. Within prophecy, there are different levels. Not every prophet has the same level. When a prophet walks in and says, I have prophecy, he must go to the high court. The high court that is situated on the Temple Mount. That's why the temple is sometimes called Devir Kodshenu. Devir comes from the word dibur, speech, because a prophet would first have to give his prophecy to the high court. The high court would interview the prophet, check if he knows what he's talking about, check if he's sane, check if he's learned, check if he's pious, and then check his prophecy. A prophet walks in and gives prophecy, they check. He says, I have a sign. God sent me to tell you that tomorrow at 12 o'clock noon when the sun is overhead, there will suddenly be a comet that will hit right here. So we check, and at 11:59, a comet hits right here. So what do? We execute him. He's a liar. Because if it's true prophecy, God isn't off by a second. True prophecy has to be 100% true. And if the prophet is off by the slightest amount, then we say he's a liar and he gets a death penalty. If a prophet comes in and says, God says tomorrow or in 40 days, the city of Nineveh will be overturned. And then 40 days pass and the city of Nineveh is not overturned. So we say, well, maybe he's telling the truth and maybe not. We don't know. Because whenever there's a prophecy of bad, a prophecy that says a destruction, so we say maybe the people repented and God undid the prophecy and said that it wouldn't happen. So we can't check a prophet necessarily when he prophesizes about bad things happen. If it comes true, so then we say, okay, there's a possibility he's a true prophet. We keep looking out for him. Eventually, the courts will give him a letter saying you are an authorized prophet. And even then, very often, the prophet would first give them his prophecy and then get their license to give it to the people. So the prophecy would really begin on the Temple Mount. We have prophets like Jonah. We're going to read the book of Jonah on Yom Kippur. Jonah actually got his first prophecy as he was dancing on Sukkot on the Temple Mount. They would always have dances, just like we have Simchat Beit HaShoeivah. They would have celebration on the Temple Mount. He was there dancing with them and suddenly got a prophetic vision. So that was easy, right? It was local. But sometimes it wasn't so simple. So again, the court interviews the prophet and then the court checks out his signs. The courts would have to learn every type of sorcery, magic, sleight of hand, any type of wisdom that was out there so that they could check if the prophet was trying to deceive them. One of the things they had on tradition was the rabbis would learn and pass on tradition all the different tricks and sorceries and every type of magic that exists out there. This was part of the rabbinic tradition, so that when they interviewed a prophet, they were masters of any type of trick he might try to pull on them, and they'd be able to catch him on that. Yes? Whoever raised their hand.
You said that prophets have to have refined personality. How is it possible that in the Torah, like Miriam, was it Miriam who commits, who speaks badly against the leprosy or whatever that disease is called?
So when we say that a prophet has to have good traits, that doesn't mean he's going to be perfect. He has to have good traits 99% of the time, and sometimes he'll make mistakes. The Torah purposely tells us that Moshe made mistakes to teach us that we should also be accepting of our own mistakes. No one's going to be perfect, but he has to be close to perfect. Miriam was a phenomenal, pious woman, and if you like, Thursday night, you could bring up the question, what did Miriam say and why did she say it? And you'll see that it's a little bit difficult to understand what was the sin in what she said. The big sister, who is 124 years old, is talking to the big brother, who is 123 years old, about their little brother, who is 120 or 119 years old, and saying, you get it? He left his wife for years? The poor woman has been sleeping alone? Don't you think we should talk to... Is that such a big sin? You can't imagine that you would be talking about a sibling. I mean, I don't know if you could imagine 124 years old, but I think you can imagine that two siblings are talking about their younger sibling when they hear that his wife has been suffering for 40 years. It's understandable. Saying, I'm not saying she was suffering, but she at least, it wasn't so pleasant living alone, you know. So we have a tradition that we had over 1 million prophets in the period of the first temple. The period of the second temple was the end of prophecy. The final prophets were Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, who were part of the men of the great assembly during the period of the second temple. So we will do a quick overview now, just so we understand what we're talking about. We have creation, right? Where creation was when, on which day? The 25th of the month of Elul, right? We have creation, and that's year number one. And then on Rosh Hashanah, on the first of Tishrei, we're right now in the month of Elul. By the way, homework for next week, learn the 12 months by heart. I'm not going to test you on it, but it's very recommended. Learn the 12 Jewish months by heart. You should know. Now we're in the month of Elul. I recommend on your papers, write the Hebrew date. I always get a kick out of this. The law says you could write a Hebrew date. So on all my checks, I write the Hebrew date. Here in Israel, they have to accept in the bank if you write the Hebrew date. That's the law. So I always do that. Guys, try to write the Hebrew date. You got to know the Hebrew month. We are now in the month of Elul. On the head of your papers, on the heading, write the Hebrew date. Get used to it.
That there's someone in the bank who really hates having to look back. You know what?
Yeah. Check. Oh, very good. The only thing is, if you're going to write Rosh Chodesh, don't write Reish Chet, because then they think you wrote Chaf Chet. They're not always accustomed to that acronym. Reish Chet being Rosh Chodesh, they might tell you the check's no good because that date didn't come yet. That's the only thing. Okay, back to our point. So at any rate, the world was created, yes, on the 25th of Elul, and then Adam was created on the first day of Tishrei. Adam has how many children? He has a son, Cain, with his twin sister. He has a son, Hevel, with his twin sister. Cain kills Hevel, and then he has a son named Chase after 130 years, right? He has a son named Chase. Chase is the one who is a replica of Adam. He is pious like Adam, and from Chase, otherwise known as Seth, we have the continuation of humanity. 10 generations from Adam to Noah, we have a flood. The whole world is decimated, and the continuation of the world is from Noah and his children. Noah has 3 children, Shem, Ham, Yefes. Shem is the prime continuation of Noah. Yefet has children, and Ham has children as well. One of Ham's children is a man by the name of Mitzrayim, otherwise known as Egypt. The Egyptian people come from Mitzrayim, the son of Ham. We say it in the evening prayer, Admas Pnei Ham. When we speak about Exodus, we say we were taken out of the land of the son of Ham. That's Mitzrayim, right? One of Ham's children's name was Mitzrayim. Cush, right? The city of Cush. Cushi is a black person, right? Cush, the city of Cush, is one of Ham's children. Okay, Canaan. Okay, so we have Shem, Ham, and Yefes. Shem has a grandson named Afer, and together they set up an academy for monotheism. 10 generations from Noah till Abraham. Abraham is born in the year 1948, otherwise known as 1948. 1948, Abraham is born, right? 1948 years from creation. Abraham discovers his creator, the famous Medrash says, at age 3, was a child prodigy. The less known Medrash and Gemara says, when he was 52 years old. In his youth, he was persecuted because he kept questioning paganism. He was actually put in jail for many years. They tried to blind him. They tried to kill him. They tried to suppress him. He wrote a book of philosophy with 400 chapters about why be a monotheist. And he spent 52 years being persecuted for monotheism without God talking to him. At the age of 75, he is married to his niece, the daughter of his brother, right? Sarah is the daughter of... What? Haran, correct. His niece, Sarah, and her brother, his nephew, Lot, accompany him after his brother Haran is actually killed for being a monotheist. So his niece, he marries his niece and he adopts his nephew and he travels with them, right? So we have Avram, 10 generations after. In the year 2000 to creation, Avram has concluded monotheism is right and his light starts shining in the world. And that's why we say the first 2000 years of creation were years of Tohu. The world was in turmoil. Avram begins a new phase in world history. Avram has 2 children, Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yishmael, from there come all the Ishmaelites, right? And then Yitzchak has 2 children, Yaakov and Esav. We are descendants of Yaakov. So we have Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Yaakov has 12 children, the 12 tribes. We descend to Egypt. We spend 210 years in Egypt and come out of Egypt, and the year is 2448. We exit Egypt. The Exodus is in the year 2448. We are in the desert for 40 years, and in the year 2488, Moshe Rabbeinu passes away, and we are under the leadership of Joshua. And that's where our story begins. Yehoshua grew up in the palace of Pharaoh. He was also an adopted son of Pharaoh's. And Yehoshua actually has a history with Moshe. He's always been at Moshe's side trying to follow him. The Medrash says that Yehoshua's father, Nun, okay, it doesn't overtly say it was his father, it just says there was a man named Nun who was very arrogant, and he led the famous rebellion of the Jews in Egypt, meaning before Moshe Rabbeinu came to the scene, 30 years earlier, the tribe of Ephraim, who were descendants of Yosef, they all said, we are princes. Our grandfather was Joseph the king here. We're not sticking around here. And so they tried to leave Egypt when they thought the 400 years were up. They were off by 30 years. The elders came to Serach Bas Asher, the adopted daughter of Asher named Serach. She was an old, old lady. She was blessed by Jacob, and so she had great longevity. And they asked her, should we listen to him? And she said, no, they don't have the right sign. This man Nun, he's not telling the right sign. And so the tribe of Ephraim leaves Egypt, and they're all killed, and their bones are left to scare anyone off. Any slave that would try to leave would come across a whole pile of corpses. And they were never buried so that everyone would be scared. And that's why when we're taken out of Egypt, God says, I can't take them directly northward. They'll all get scared. What will they get scared of? They'll see the bones of the tribes of Ephraim that were all murdered. So that's a man named Nun. It would seem that was probably Joshua's father who led that rebellion. Joshua grows up in Pharaoh's palace. On a different occasion, I'll tell you the full story. Okay, in a nutshell, I'll tell you in 1 minute. It's a long story. I'll say it in 1 minute. There was an old man and an old woman. His name was Nun. Her name we don't know. No, his name was not Nun. We don't know his name. An old man and an old woman, they couldn't have kids. They kept praying. One day he comes home. He tells his wife, I had a terrible dream. He's all sad. What's wrong? You're going to have a child. So why are you all sad? I saw in a dream that the child's going to kill me and try to marry you. So they say, well, let's see if it comes true. Well, a short while later, she's pregnant after years that she couldn't conceive. So now they see his dream is true. So what do? When the child is born, they put him in a casket. They put him out in the Nile. Only the story doesn't end like Moshe Rabbeinu. A fish comes and swallows the casket and swims off. And the couple goes back home to cry. Here their dream came true, and then they had to put the kid in the casket, and here they're swallowed by a fish. What they didn't know is that a minute later, that fish was caught by Pharaoh's fishermen. They see this huge fish weighing an exorbitant amount. They slit it open. They find a baby inside. They bring that baby. They say, this is an angel, this baby. They bring that baby to Pharaoh. And that baby is given the nickname Bin Nun. Nun in Aramaic means fish. So he's given the name Bin Nun, son of the fish. And he's considered a miracle baby, and he grows up in Pharaoh's palace. He is appointed as Pharaoh's executioner. And one day, Pharaoh has an issue with his biological father, and he brings him in. The law in Egypt, and we'll encounter this on other occasions, the law in Egypt was that whoever executes gets to marry the man's who he executed, marry his wife, and take all his belongings. And so Joshua is Pharaoh's chief executioner. His own father is brought before him for execution, and he doesn't know it. He executes his own father. He then goes home to his mother's house. He comes through the door, and the woman's standing there. And all those years that he drank the non-kosher milk from all these non-kosher Egyptians, he starts vomiting milk, and he can't stop vomiting the milk. And he draws his sword, and he says, you must be some kind of witch. What's going on here? Why am I vomiting all this milk? And she runs away from him, and she says, no, you're my son. He looks at her and says, what do you mean? And then she tells him the whole story. And then he connects it with what he heard, that he was found in a fish. And it all connects. And then Joshua comes back. And that's Joshua's history. So Yoshua is the trusted disciple who never leaves Moshe's side, who always prepares the academy, prepares the benches, because he was always concerned to make sure the academy was ready for learning. He merited, he was always diligent in learning everything he could to be by Moshe's side whenever he could. So he merited to be the continuation of Moshe. There were other people who were smarter. We're going to see, he has rabbis he could ask his questions to. There were other people, like Moshe's children, who were greater. But Joshua, because of his diligence, he becomes the next leader. So Moshe Rabbeinu dies. And everyone mourns him for 30 days. During those 30 days, Joshua has been appointed leader. Remember, before Moshe died, he made everyone know that that Yoshua would be the next leader. And this is where our story begins, in the beginning of the book of Joshua. And we'll begin our story now. We have 10 minutes after that intro.